Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 308. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, go on over to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun show for you this week. We must get started. Well, just the other day, my listener friends, a new website was launched to the world, and it's one that you guys should most certainly know about. Pride.com is a content and conversation destination where pride belongs to everyone. Pride.com's priority is to report on trending topics and to feature user-submitted comments, content, photography. In addition, they publish bite-sized stories, which are perfect for people like me, clever and comic listicles, which entertain me, original video content. I've been surfing around it all day and lost quite a bit of my day engaged in the materials posted there. Here to talk about Pride.com is the editor-in-chief of the site, Levi Chambers. Levi, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. We're so excited to be here.
First, hey, congratulations on the launch of Pride.com.
Thank you. It was a lot of work, and it turned out wonderful. We're very excited.
Levi, what does an actual launch look like? Is there a button that's pressed? Was there a party? What happened?
You know, there really wasn't a party. There was pizza involved, but it was only because we were, you know, we're in the office for 14 hours a day, so we had to eat at some point. But a launch, it's a lot of work and a lot of planning. We started planning Pride or Pride.com in October is when we really kicked it off, started working with content creators of all sorts to kind of build up the brand and everything that it represents. So it's a lot of work, and unfortunately there's no button to push because I probably just would have pushed it right away. But
so do you set a specific time and say, this is when we're launching, and then you just know that point, it's up in the world?
Yeah, that's exactly what we did. We basically set a day, and when that day came, we just had to, at that point, press the button, or someone did, wherever the button is, they pressed it.
In my head, Levi, that person was you.
Yeah, you know, I was definitely in the room when the button was pressed, but I didn't get to press it.
All right. Something to work on. All right. Well, let's back up a step. What brings you, Levi, to this work? I know you're a content strategist, but I barely know what that means.
See, when you go to a website, it's like the right content to the right people at the right time. So Pride is obviously focused on the LGBT community. So that was obviously the audience we had to create. As a content strategist, you essentially create the world that you want people to experience, and you hope that it meets all of their expectations. That's kind of it in a really tight little nutshell. But yeah, it's kind of a fun gig. That was my past life. Now I'm an editor at Pride. But it's basically, I was tasked with creating something that hopefully everyone likes. And yeah, I think we're kind of experiencing that now, and people are very excited about it. But it was definitely a challenge. It's the most challenging project that I've ever worked on, and it's also the best.
I can imagine. How did Pride.com come your way?
It actually came via Twitter. I saw that the company was wanting to launch a brand focused on LGBT millennials or 20-somethings, and I reached out via Twitter to the editorial director at Hear Media and basically said, I want to do this. What do I have to do? And he followed me on Twitter and then DM'd me, and the rest is history.
Come on, stuff really happens like that?
I know, that's what I thought when it happened. I was like, oh, how crazy, they actually responded, and now he's followed me, and now I'm going to, you know, fly to L.A. I lived in Arizona before Pride, and so I, you know, came to L.A. and met everyone and kind of got ramped up on all the things they were excited to do, and about 3 months after my first tweet, I was, you know, in L.A. looking out of the Hear Media offices.
Wow, that's got to be quite the transition for you.
It was crazy and exciting and fun, and a long time before we had Pride, and it was kind of kept me going because we were so excited for everything it would be.
Yeah.
So to finally have it was awesome. Oh,
that's so amazing. So when you saw that something like this was going to happen, why did this project specifically appeal to you?
Well, you know, there's nothing really like it. I mean, there's a lot of other brands that have similar content or similar sections, but at Pride, we really did want it to be everything to everyone. So there's not a lot of sites, if you think about it, that are fun content focused on 20-somethings who are LGB and T, as well as anything else out there in the world, right? Any classification that you want to give yourself, we wanted the site to resonate and mean something to absolutely anyone that went to Pride.com. So that was kind of it. It was something that there's no competition for it, really, because there's no one else doing the exact same things we're doing.
Right.
We're looking at trending topics and news and celebrity content, everything from the perspective of an LGBTQA 20-something. So it's really unique in that way. And then the website is obviously very different than anything else out there. It has some very cool features.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk about those features. What does it mean to be the editor-in-chief of Pride.com? I'm seeing on the website you have quite a staff there. It looks like an amazing group of folks working with you.
Absolutely, I do. I work with, I obviously have an editor, Yasmin. She does a wonderful job. You can see her on the website. She's also a really talented writer. But I also am working with video contributors and Instagram photographers because we're on every platform. Obviously, we're a social media and entertainment website. That's kind of our focus. So it has been, it's a lot of fun and a lot of collaboration. I don't think anyone can have as much fun as I do in a day, especially in like an LGBT position, because we get to do so many amazing things and make a difference in the community. And we have, you know, some very loud sister websites without an advocate that kind of helped us to amplify our voice and be heard. And it's just very unique to anything. There's no other job I could be doing right now and say, wow, that's so cool. It's so much cooler than being the editor-in-chief of Pride.
Yeah, oh my gosh, that sounds like so much fun. So how, and you mentioned Out Magazine, you mentioned The Advocate. How do you work with them? How does it fit into their brand? Is it a nice little partnership there?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about Out, it's Out is very fancy and entertainment-focused, and it's kind of an inspirational brand in a lot of ways. And then Advocate's right there reporting on all of the breaking news that matters to the LGBT community. And then Pride kind of fits in right at the end, and it's like, hi, we're here to have fun because we like entertaining stuff and social media and Instagram. So it definitely fits in, and it complements its sister publications.
Nice.
But they're very well established, obviously. So it's nice to have, you know, a big sister like Advocate to retweet you on Twitter once in a while.
Oh, yeah. We love that. We love when they chime in. Now, I would imagine that Pride.com, that had to have been taken by someone at some point, wasn't it? Just to get that address seems like a pretty major address.
You know, we have like, seriously, it's seriously like a closet full of amazing URLs, and Pride is just one of them. When I heard we had it, I was like, why aren't we using that? That one's amazing. Because originally, we kind of bounced around the idea of what could we name the site? Should we come up with something new? And then when we looked at the URLs, it was like, Pride is amazing. Why have we not used that yet? It's just such a cool, unique URL. And yeah, every time anyone asks me, oh, what is the website? I'm like, it's Pride.com, like literally Pride.com. And it's always kind of shocking because URLs are, you know, they're hard to find.
Oh, yeah.
But we were very lucky that, you know, Advocate and Out already had this little sister sitting in their closet. So we had to take her out of the closet.
Yes, that's a good thing. Listeners, again, we're here with editor-in-chief of Pride.com, Levi Chambers. Levi, what does that word Pride mean to you? What does it come to mean to you, having worked on this project?
Well, I think if you'd have asked me last week, I'd have said Pride means a lot of work.
Yes.
But now Pride is, it is like we've talked about it, it is everything to everyone. It's likable. It's shareable. I tell everyone Pride is a girl. I don't know why. Maybe it's because she's pink. But so I'm always like, oh, Pride, yeah, she's likable. She's relevant. I think Pride is a community builder. I've received a lot of emails from people, and sometimes I have to stop reading my email because they will be so touching. We launched, because there was a huge team behind it. But we launched Pride, you know, basically a week and a half ago, and 3 days after launch, I had emails from people saying, you know, I need advice, or I want to know more about this, or I think I might be trans, and I don't know what to do. And it was in those moments I realized that, to me, Pride, you know, the website, Pride is fun and she's entertaining. But to someone else, let's say, you know, in a place where they maybe don't have a lot of LGBT friends, Pride could be the only way they can reach other 20-somethings who are experiencing the same things they are. So that was kind of shifted the meaning of Pride to me from being, you know, this project that I worked on and this really fabulous website with lots of cool tools to show me that it really is. Pride is about community. It's about being who you are and feeling comfortable in being who you are.
Nice. Oh, that's so fantastic. All right, so Let's be real here. I'm 38 years old. I'm enjoying this site immensely. Am I outside of my demographic right now?
I mean, I don't think so. Absolutely not. Like we've said, I want it to be something for everyone. I mean, obviously, if you're interested in Taylor Swift or Sia or what's going on with Beyonce's new video, then Pride is totally going to be up your alley. So I don't want anyone to ever feel like, oh, that's for 20-somethings. It's just for millennials. Because, you know, it is. It's for everyone. And if those are the things that are relevant to you, then why wouldn't you be there? You know, adding your voice or sharing it with your friends, your family. I think it's totally a wonderful place for anyone to find stuff they like.
I was good with 2 out of 3 of those. I'm very the Taylor Swift. That's happening for me. I enjoy Sia's new cover of California Dreamin', but I'm okay with not knowing what Beyonce's wearing next.
Well, you know, today she dropped a video on Tidal, so that's super exciting.
See, I don't know stuff. There's stuff I don't know, and that's why I need this website. I need it. What does it mean to create a website for millennials, for 20-somethings? What distinguishes this from, say, another site? Like, what do you have to go in thinking?
You know, when we started creating the ideas behind Pride, like, what will she talk about? I knew that what's trending really matters. So when something starts trending on Tumblr or Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, I have to create something that fits all in those verticals so that everyone, no matter where they are on any platform, can find us and interact with us. So trending was a huge, 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 huge driving force behind our content strategy. And then next, I really wanted it to be positive. So we don't focus on negative things. We focus on what we love, not what we hate. I think that was really important, especially for millennials. It's got to have a positive feel, so that was super important. And then the shareability of the site, we really wanted you to be able to share absolutely anything. So if there's a quote in an article that you like, you can highlight that text and then tweet it out. So shareability was like king. And then I also wanted people to be able to voice their own opinions and then have their voice amplified, which if you use the site, you will know through like our commenting features, it does a really wonderful job at featuring even, you know, our readers as the main comment on the site, or they might get lucky and their tweet from their Twitter account can even be highlighted on the homepage. So I wanted to use it as a tool to amplify the voices of LGBT people everywhere, not just, you know, celebrities like Taylor Swift or someone super famous. I felt that everyone needed a place where they could read, interact with the community, be excited about content, share their opinions, and then have their voice amplified by Pride.
Nice. And ours is not to knock other websites. We're a positive show as well. We like all positivity. But I certainly can argue in looking at some other sites, and we've certainly covered this quite a bit in the past 6-7 years of doing the show, that 20-somethings often don't feel like there is a place for their voice on some of these other media.
Yeah, and I think part of that is that a lot of other media companies and publishers, they don't focus primarily on the things that 20-somethings are excited about. So you can kind of feel like maybe you don't know enough about the subjects that are there to sound smart in the comments, and that can be scary. It makes you not want to comment. I mean, I know there's times even when I'm reading, let's say, news on a website, and I go, I really don't understand this subject that well. I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to look stupid. And I think that was part of it, is we wanted everything to be really light, really easy to understand. So even if we're talking about something that might have a lot more depth to it, like, let's say, marriage equality and the battle for marriage equality, right? Everything we create has to be in a way that when you read it, you can read it once and go, okay, I get it. I understand what they're saying. So it helps people feel more welcome. Like, no, you're not smart enough to read this article because you don't understand this aspect. Nothing on Pride can do that. We want to make sure that everyone feels like they get it when they read it, because that's what, you know, inspires people to talk. They have to understand something before they can, you know, shape an opinion and then share it with the world. So I think that's really what makes us different.
So we have to talk about what users would find on the site, like what they would actually find there. So I'm scrolling through right now. I have to tell you, I don't know who this LARPing guy is.
Oh, ooh, okay, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I actually wrote that over the weekend. So that kind of gets on with our talking about trending topics, things that are going crazy and going to be amazing. So Joey Graceffa is a YouTuber, a super famous YouTuber. He's got a bazillion subscribers. If he's listening to this, I'm sure he will retweet it or something. But he's a YouTuber with a bazillion subscribers and lots of fans. And he made this, like, do you know what LARPing is?
I do.
Okay, great. Because I didn't at the time, and I was like, great word.
We should say for our listeners, I mean, I only know that because I was a dean of students, so live action role-playing, folks.
Yeah. It's like you'd pretend to be like a wizard or something and then, you know, I don't know, go out in a park and kill demons.
Exactly.
That kind of thing. So anyway, over the weekend, he published a video, music video, in which he kind of came out in a really, like, fantastical way as, like, this King of the Forest thing. Anyway, so we created a story on it, and at the time, I think Joey's video had, like, less than 1,000 views, and it's well over 1 million now. It has a ton of views now. But we try to jump on those topics really fast and report to you what's either trending or what's about to trend as fast as we can. So that kind of is a great example. And then it's also of content that's really relevant to 20-somethings. I mean, 20-somethings like YouTube and Tumblr. So we are often, I guess you'd say, we're on the prowl on those platforms looking for stuff that's going to be really fun.
Let's talk about some other trending things. How about that new Taylor Swift video?
Yeah, we actually wrote on that today, and I know it did. It dropped yesterday at the, was it during the Billboard? Or
it did,
the Billboard
yeah.
Award. But, yeah, today we kind of, we got together this morning and said, okay, what can we do to kind of play off of it? And we created a quiz, which is super fun and super shareable, that basically tells you which queen from the Bad Blood video you are.
Nice.
So that's another example of jumping on some really hot trends. Taylor's always trending, but is definitely a great video and a fun way for us to kind of interact with it and give our readers something different than just an article or, you know, a listicle of gifts. Provide them with something a little more interactive and fun. So that kind of plays into the trending idea, just like our Joey Graceffa video did. We're constantly on Twitter pretty much every morning. That's like my go-to, is we'll head over to Twitter, see what's trending or starting to trend. We use lists to kind of monitor our favorite celebs or influencers and then create content around the awesome things they do.
Okay, I feel like this is about to be not a smart question that I'm about to ask. Are you prepared for that?
I'm prepared.
What if something happens in the middle of the night? Is there someone monitoring that? Or is there, like, at least a period of downtime where someone could expect Pride.com to be static?
To be static, well, there's a couple of, it depends on static. So the site actually is constantly reorganizing itself.
Okay.
Because it knows what's actually popular on the site. So it will reorganize its navigation all the time. So right now it might have a certain number of hashtags, whatever it has. It's got like fashion and coming out and Taylor Swift. And then tonight when those aren't the trending anymore, it'll change and reorder those into whatever's popular at any time.
Okay.
So that kind of protects us in some way. But, I mean, I never sleep. I'm pretty much up, you know, 23 and a half hours a day, so I try to report on things all the time.
No, Levi, that wasn't the right answer. We like the part where you sleep.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. Yeah. During, of course, at night, like, there's only so much trending that we can handle. So sometimes it has to take, like, a break, and we'll get it in the morning.
Okay. All right. Now, I have to imagine you guys have put so much work into this. Were there any glitches right away that you're like, oh, gosh, we got to fix that right away?
I mean, I would notice lots of things. There was nothing on the site that our readers would have said, oh, look, that's broken. For me, because I've been there from the beginning, I'm like, oh, my gosh, there's all these things I want changed. But as of right now, the site it's operating the way it should. But, of course, with every launch, there's always something I'm like, that could have gone better.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking at the staff, and it struck me, well, this looks like a group of millennials. I would imagine there's quite a nice vibe working together with this group.
Absolutely. Definitely have a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds and from a lot of different interests. Like Dustin, one of our freelancers, he's really big on, I guess you'd say, like geek content and Star Wars and things like that. And then Alex, another one of our freelancers, really likes to stay up to date on all of the celebrity gossip and pop culture. Everyone definitely has their own little niche, but it's really fun to come together and for us all to be able to collaborate and create really great stuff and bring the site to life. I think that was one of the most important parts of Pride, was to have a team that had so many different life experiences that they really could speak to anyone, because Pride is for everyone, so we had to have content literally for everyone, which is tricky. But it's definitely come together, and I think the team has a lot to do with that.
And lest someone think that you can't find Ruth Bader Ginsburg on Pride.com, you can.
Absolutely. She was trending on Facebook today.
Look at that.
I know. That was one of our top stories, actually. I think right now it's pretty popular. But yes, you can find all sorts of things like we talked about. I think, you know, even that story on another website, let's say, you know, something more specific or something more, I guess you'd say, like news-oriented, it might be a little bit too dry or too, I guess you'd say, like too in the weeds for someone who doesn't really understand maybe, you know, who she is.
Right.
So we tried to kind of deliver that in a way that was like, hey, you need to know this, but let's make it a little more fun and help you to understand why it's important.
Okay. How do you guys, I've never asked someone this before, how do you pick your advertisers? Because I would imagine that's a pretty important piece of this puzzle.
It absolutely is, and we definitely pick advertisers that we know align really well with that brand and with our brand and with the demographic, things that 20-somethings are going to be very, very interested in or at least can be passionate around. Because I think, you know, advertising has changed so much,
right,
especially with social media. It's important that the brands that are our advertisers, our partners in advertising, that they're really relevant to our readers. Because that's, you know, that's effective advertising. They have to be things that when you come to the site and you're reading it, you're not like, why is that an ad? You know, I don't buy bookshelves. Why is they advertising bookshelves to me? Or something like that. You know, I think it was tough because the site wouldn't feel as authentically 20-something if the advertisers didn't align. And we have done a really great job, especially with our current advertisers, at selecting brands that are like, hey, we get it. Let's do this.
Yeah. By the way, there's this really cool article on there. I love it. It's a queer cultural toolkit for baby gays.
Oh, isn't that fun? Yeah, I think we published that today. And it's actually, it's by Taylor Barrett. She's one of our video contributors. She's very, very talented and very fun. The article's kind of all about her video. We are publishing new videos basically every weekday, so Monday through Friday. They're all by different video contributors, which makes it very cool, so you're not, you know, watching the same person over and over. You can find someone you like and then tune in every Monday or every Tuesday whenever they're on Pride's Pride Show, which is super fun, and kind of get life or whatever our topic is for the week from a different perspective.
Now, if people stroll on over to pride.com and look at the logo, it says beta on it. What does that mean, and when is that going away?
Beta means if it breaks, don't get mad because we're trying to fix things.
I feel like it should just beta. Say that. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Beta means please don't be mean. I'm fragile. So when, you know, until I look at the site and I say, okay, everything's perfect, nothing's wrong, it's going to say that because I want when that logo is, you know, revealed and it's the real deal and doesn't have the beta on there and it's, we're not practicing, I guess you'd say, I want it to really be ready.
Yeah, nice. Now, we talk about this quite a bit on the show in looking at various different media. One of the challenges often out there, and we covered this quite a bit on last week's show, is getting voices of color out there. How are you guys approaching that?
Absolutely. You know, we try to give everyone an equal voice. And if you look at our team, we're definitely reporting from all perspectives on all sorts of topics. And it's very important that we use Pride's voice to amplify people who, or maybe, you know, groups of people who don't have a lot of representation, especially in media. We do a lot with the bisexual community and the trans community. We're working really hard to make it so that Pride has an equal representation of everyone, because that is critical. There's a lot of sites out there that focus on one part of the LGBT community, and that's not our goal. We're bigger than that. We want to focus on everyone and have content that everyone can relate to.
Wow. I am a little bit nervous that you're not sleeping very much.
Yeah, I do like coffee. So if you're ever, you know, I drink a lot of coffee. No, it's more fun than anything else, just working on Pride and trying to bring it to life and making it work. It's really rewarding to get feedback from people on, like I said, on email or Instagram and Twitter where it just reminds you. It's like, you know, to me, it's a website and I'm there working with people and we're putting out our content, we're publishing stories, and it's a really amazing brand, but to someone else, it could mean the world.
Yeah.
So that's definitely motivating.
Oh, so exciting. So exciting. What's the next evolution? What's next?
Pride has a lot of exciting things. There's like a phase two, which is top secret, so I can't say too much.
Okay.
But Pride will kind of evolve and more features will become available. And as we iron out all the wrinkles on the site right now, we are also ramping up lots of other things. We have a lot we want to do with video and with YouTube, as well as some of our video brands, kind of work with them to really get, like you said, to bring those voices that are a little bit quiet, make them louder, and give them, you know, representation on all social media platforms and stuff to share everywhere. So that's kind of our next step with Pride, is to get her, I guess, in all types of content, not just, you know, some video and some editorial. We will be everywhere.
You have such a relationship with this girl.
I know. Sometimes she's annoying, but I still love her.
Something to work through. It's something to work through. Yeah. All right, listeners, it's pretty easy. You just got to stroll on over to pride.com. I love what you guys are doing. You are doing exactly what we want people to be doing, providing a place for voices that are not currently being heard to have this place to celebrate, to be heard, to interact. Some really great things happening over there on pride.com. And if it breaks, don't get mad at them. It says beta right there.
Yes, don't get mad.
All right. Levi, keep doing this. We are so excited to see what happens next with Pride.com.
Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun, and we're really glad that people like you are excited, because we are.
I look into the window of my mind. Reflections of the fears I know I've left behind. Step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can do the same, yeah. What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never.
Alright, folks, and we are back. Well, we have oodles and oodles of time left on this week's episode to talk all about the latest LGBT news that's out there. We will start in the state of Louisiana. Just hours after Louisiana lawmakers effectively killed a sweeping anti-gay religious freedom bill this week, Governor Bobby Jindal issued an executive order to, quote, accomplish the intent of the bill. He is so intent on this passing. Like the legislation turned away by state lawmakers, Jindal's, quote, marriage and conscience order. I kid you not, it is called a marriage and conscience order, and this is being pushed through by an actual governor, one of the 50 governors in the United States. Well, this marriage and conscience order prohibits Louisiana from taking any punitive action against an individual, business, organization, or nonprofit that, quote, acts in accordance with a religious belief that marriage is between one man and one woman. The order takes effect immediately, and it will remain in effect until it is amended or repealed by the governor, which I would not anticipate it being repealed by the governor, given that the governor is the one who issued the executive order. Bobby Jindal has been an early and outspoken supporter of efforts to give Louisiana this right to discriminate, which is what we would all call it, against legally married same-sex couples, even defending the doomed legislation in an April op-ed for the New York Times. Just one day before issuing his latest executive order, the Louisiana Republican formed an exploratory committee to consider running for president. Well, gosh, I'm sure you know that's a huge coincidence. Except it's not. So we are at that point where folks are going to move as far right as possible in order to further polarize everyone so that we can get as many votes as possible for the Republican nomination for president. I'm not saying that's his official platform. I'm just saying that, yes, that is his official platform. According to Jody Winterhoff, the vice president of policy and political affairs at the Human Rights Campaign, quote, Governor Jindal made it clear that he's so desperate to advance his long-shot presidential campaign that he'll say or do almost anything, including enable discrimination in the name of religion, end quote. So what we are seeing now is that some state lawmakers in other places, most notably in New York, are calling for their governors to issue some executive orders banning travel to Louisiana. We saw this a little bit in Indiana, slightly in Arkansas, but now we're seeing it full force in Louisiana of lawmakers pushing to say, hey, we don't want any of our state money going to support travel to Louisiana, given that our employees might face discrimination there. And they're there to do government business. We don't want them facing discrimination there, so let's stop paying for it. So all eyes are on Louisiana. This is a little bit different. It's a little bit different than Indiana and Arkansas, which was the state legislature, certainly supported by their governors, passing these right to discriminate bills, these religious freedom bills. This is the case in Louisiana, where the governor, despite his state legislature saying, yeah, this is not really where we're headed right now, this is where a governor has now stepped in, an individual has stepped in and says, no, we have to do it. We have to do it right now, which is a little bit hilarious because Governor Jindal is one of the many governors and one of the many lawmakers out there who decry when courts get involved in marriage equality and always put it out there, no, we have to put it up for a popular vote. And yet here, when we had the legislature failing to act on this and saying this is not the time for this, hopefully never the time, but you never know, at least for the time being, the legislature in Louisiana saying this is not the time for this type of bill, Governor Jindal has stepped in and said, well, I'll just do it myself. So he, being someone who has decried activist judges, is now being an activist governor. And there you go. So all eyes on Louisiana. In Pittsburgh, right next door in Pittsburgh, very close to Cleveland. It's less than 2 hours away. I've not yet been to Pittsburgh. I hear good things. I was told Pittsburgh is not the Pittsburgh of Queer as Folk. Queer as Folk, a big part of my life when it came out here in the U.S. and the one previously in England. If you've only seen the United States version of Queer as Folk, if you've only seen that American version, I urge you to go and watch the British Queer as Folk that preceded the American Queer as Folk, the British Queer as Folk, quite, quite brilliant. That said, it makes it look like Pittsburgh is a gay mecca, and I'm told by my friends who have actually been to Pittsburgh, no, not so much. So I'm dialing down my expectations, even though I really want to visit. One time I'm not sure I'm going to visit is during their Pittsburgh Pride event. The nonprofit organization that throws Pittsburgh's Pride event, they are now defending themselves. They have hired pop star Iggy Azalea as a headliner for their June event. If you do not know Iggy Azalea, she is an Australian rapper and singer who has found big-time success here in the U.S. She has a new single out with Miss Britney Spears. They sang on the Billboard Music Awards the other night. But Iggy Azalea is often criticized for stealing her style and sound from African-American culture. She's also been accused of blatant racism and homophobia thanks to tweets she sent a few years back. Most have been deleted, but some reference the term "no homo." Can't believe that people actually use that phrase, no homo. Azalea's detractors took to social media to oppose her appearance at Pittsburgh Pride, but the Delta Foundation, which is the foundation that has brought her to Pittsburgh, that has booked her, they said they would not hire someone they believe was intolerant. They wrote the following on their website, quote, "If we believed that Iggy Azalea was racist or homophobic, we certainly would not have selected her to headline Pittsburgh Pride. We also don't believe she would have agreed to come if she was racist or homophobic." I don't know about that. "Iggy is a highly regarded artist and female entertainer, and we have received a tremendous amount of positive messages from members of the community and our allies both locally and nationally that are excited that she will be performing at Pittsburgh Pride. We believe that the pushback is part of a larger discussion happening across America as it relates to race and gender. We believe that same conversation needs to happen here in Pittsburgh, and today reached out to several community leaders about facilitating a discussion about race and gender, specifically as it relates to the LGBT community. We look forward to being a part of this conversation in the very near future as we work to make Pittsburgh the most livable city for all." Regardless, some see this scandal as more about the Delta Foundation and less about Azalea. Michael David Battle, who is the founder of the Garden of Peace Project, a Pittsburgh LGBT group, told City Paper, quote, "The Iggy Azalea thing was just a last straw for folks. Since Delta took Pride over, it's been a white, cis, gay man's event." There you go. I guess, can we turn to the part in the statement that the Delta Foundation says, quote, "We also don't believe she would have agreed to come if she was racist or homophobic," end quote. Let's challenge that for a second. I don't know that that's necessarily true. Artists take gigs when they get paid for it, especially when they get paid a ton, which I am sure Iggy Azalea is getting paid a ton of money to play Pittsburgh Pride. I have no doubt about that. I was just on the phone with my mom this morning, who was relating the story to me about a guy that works with my dad who was throwing a bar mitzvah for his son. And guess who they had at the bar mitzvah? This is at a New York City bar mitzvah. Yes, in accordance with all Jewish customs and the solemnity of bar mitzvahs and the rite of passage of a young boy turning into a man to celebrate that holy occasion. Yes, of course, they're fun too, but to celebrate that holy occasion and to recognize it in all its holiness, they of course booked Nicki Minaj. I don't think that Nicki Minaj agreed to play this random bar mitzvah in New York City because Nicki Minaj, such a believer in the holiness of bar mitzvahs. No, she got paid $400,000. Can we put aside for a second the idea that someone paid $400,000 to have Nicki Minaj at their son's bar mitzvah? So let's just put that over in the parking lot. Let's bracket that up. And let's more focus on the reality that folks don't just play, artists don't just play these events because, you know, it's in line with their beliefs. They get a ton of money for it sometimes. So that's what's going on in Pittsburgh. Keeping our eyes on, I don't think they're actually going to get rid of Iggy Azalea. I think that's, once that's booked, it would be a disaster for them if they said, no, we're going to bow to pressure and not have Iggy Azalea. So, but we'll still keep our eyes on Iggy Azalea and everything going on in Pittsburgh. If you just go a few miles away and travel back here to Cleveland, Cleveland has quite made the news. Not just Cleveland, but the West End Tavern that's about maybe, I don't know, a mile from where I'm sitting right now in the studio. An image of a bar receipt imprinted with an anti-gay slur has gone viral, though the motivation behind putting the word on the receipt, it was said that this was not malicious. Alyssa Maugens, who works as a bartender at the West End Tavern in Lakewood, Ohio, a mile from where I sit right here, she wrote the word fags on a customer's receipt. A photograph of the receipt went viral after it was posted to social media, with many users expressing disgust and vowing to boycott the establishment. But they are saying, Alyssa is saying, that this image was taken out of context. She said, quote, I understand it's a very sensitive thing, but it was definitely not meant to be offensive towards anyone. Her friend, Andrew Rawlings, who was the recipient of this receipt, he said, quote, nothing was meant to be malicious about it, nothing at all. He said it was meant to stay, quote, amongst friends, just joking around. Why he then, by the way, for something that was meant to stay amongst friends, then posted it to Instagram actually gets me a little bit fired up. I think there's a larger social commentary here about social media, especially about ones that, you know, this was not a private account. I have any number of friends who are like, oh, I got to hashtag the hell out of this picture so that people pick it up, so that people who are not connected to me via Instagram or Twitter or Facebook can see this. Right? It's not just about this private account where I'm going to post something and, hey, it's only the people with whom I'm friends are going to see it. No, you put it on Instagram, you hashtagged it, and you wanted other people to see it. So to then tell interviewers, my gosh, it was meant to be amongst friends just joking around, is completely, completely BS. That is ridiculous. And, you know, I think that it's getting the attention you didn't want. But you're feeling pretty silly now. He posted the photograph to Instagram. A friend of a friend copied the image and posted it to Facebook, where it was shared, you know, many, many thousands of times. And now it's made national press. One commentator wrote, quote, I'll never go there now. And others called those who work at the bar disgusting, gross, and walking sacks of sewage. Even after the intent was clarified, however, many said the act of using an anti-gay slur was uncalled for. Lucas Barstow, who initially shared the image to his network, said this, quote, words like that should never be used jokingly, not when there are LGBT teens committing suicide over being called that word or worse. This is still trashy, disgusting, and inappropriate. That word, my gosh, that word fags, that'll kill you every time. Anytime I hear that word used. And by the way, I just heard it last night. I walked a half a block down to my mailbox to mail a couple letters. I still write letters. I enjoy writing letters. You should do it too. People enjoy receiving them. It's like a treat. Put the stamps on them. Walked half a block to the mailbox to throw them there in the mail carrier system supporting the U.S. Postal Service. And one guy was screaming out at his friend in greeting, what up, faggot? I cringe. I cringe every time. And I was of half a mind to say something, but then I'm also very conscious that we don't always use our voice when we don't know what the effect is going to be, right? So it didn't feel like the most safe situation for me in that moment, so I'm using my voice in a different way and decrying it here on the radio. So it doesn't mean that we don't speak out against these things. It just means that we often need to pick a time and a place that is much more comfortable for us where we can have an effect. So that is what's happening here in Cleveland. By the way, that's not what's happening here in Cleveland. It's just a story that's coming out of Cleveland. We don't want this to characterize all of Cleveland, certainly of Lakewood. If you don't know Lakewood, where this West End Tavern is located, Lakewood was for years and years and years noted as one of the places in the U.S. with the highest concentration of LGBT folks living there. So it doesn't characterize Lakewood, but it is a story coming out of here in Cleveland. But if you are looking to travel, if you want to find the happiest LGBT people around, apparently you need to consider a move to the Nordic regions of the world. The gay dating network Planet Romeo, they released a survey this week that ranks the happiness level of gay men in different countries around the world. It's called the Gay Happiness Index, and this year's survey saw Iceland top the list, and Uganda fell to the bottom of the list. The index results stemmed from a survey of 115,000 gay men from 127 countries based on three general criteria of day-to-day life: public opinion, public behavior, and life satisfaction. Following Iceland and rounding out the top four are three other Nordic countries: Norway, Denmark, and Sweden. Look at that. We just got to go to the Nordic region of the world. The United Kingdom came in at the 23rd spot, and the United States came in down at 26. Because the Gay Happiness Index just focuses on gay men, the results don't specifically deal with things like sexism, transphobia, or other issues affecting the LGBT community. By the way, it's a really silly index. This isn't telling us much, but it's fun to talk about. Planet Romeo notes in their survey results, quote, "Things seem to improve in North and South America as well as in Southeast Asia. That's great news. Europe shows a huge diversity from gay heaven in the Northwest to gay drama in the southeasterly direction. Africa, Central Asia, and the Middle East are depressing, but no big surprise there. In general, the number of countries where the situation is getting worse is painfully shocking to us," end quote. Again, that's from the folks over at Planet Romeo. They also noted that Uganda, Kyrgyzstan, Sudan, Nigeria, and Ethiopia mark the five countries with the most negative changes over the last year. These five are also, quote, "known for having a negative view towards basic human freedoms in society." Yes, we do know that. And Nordic countries have tended to rank highly on surveys like the Gay Happiness Index in the past, with Norway taking the top spot in a survey from the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association last year. In 2012, only 10 countries in the world allowed same-sex couples to adopt children, and three of those 10 of all the countries in the world were Nordic. So there you go. We got to head to all lands Nordic. I will say a little personal plug here. If you are in the Cleveland area on July 8th, I will be giving a talk on my experiences traveling to Uganda the few times that I have gone there. So it's at 7 p.m. It's at the Happy Dog here in Cleveland. And you can find all of the information on Facebook. You can just go to the This Show Is So Gay page on Facebook and there will be a link right there to it. So if you're looking for a trip on July 8th, come on down to the Happy Dog and hear me do a talk. All proceeds will be going to the Cleveland Mediation Center. So, very exciting there. I'm excited to do it. Now, that's kind of a silly survey. And then this survey that I'm about to tell you about is not silly. It's just really, really bad. A grad student who has been accused of faking data for a gay marriage study that appeared in a top research journal says he's, quote, "gathering evidence to respond to the uproar." Michael LaCour's only comment on the allegation came on his Twitter account after his co-author requested a retraction of the study published in the journal Science. This study claimed people's views on same-sex marriage could be changed by short one-on-one conversations. The co-author, Donald Green of Columbia, said he was alerted to the irregularities in the findings by two Stanford researchers who were trying to replicate and expand on them. He said this, quote, "I am deeply embarrassed by this turn of events and apologize to the editors, reviewers, and readers of Science." He said, this is the co-author, that after the questions were raised, LaCour, his co-author, refused to turn over contact information for the survey respondents and claimed that the raw data had been accidentally deleted. Oy, that's never good for research when someone says that. The journal Science said it was looking into the allegations. In the meantime, it published an, quote, "editorial expression of concern to alert readers to the fact that the paper might be bogus." The study, which was picked up by a ton of media outlets, it claimed a 20-minute conversation with a gay canvasser produced a big change in attitudes towards same-sex marriage and that the shift in thinking could last for 9 months. Wow. The Stanford researcher said that when they contacted the survey firm LaCour supposedly used, it knew nothing about the project, and they discovered the staffer they thought had carried out the work. Oh, that staffer doesn't even exist. Reached by email, LaCour responded with the same statement that was in his tweets. He wrote this, "I read irregularities in LaCour posted at the Stanford site. I'm gathering evidence and relevant information so I can provide a single comprehensive response. I will do so at my earliest opportunity." Oy, this is so uncomfortable. As someone who has done this type of research, this is so uncomfortable. So he is Michael J. LaCour. I'm looking at his Twitter feed right now. He is a political science PhD candidate at UCLA. So yeah, this would have been a great study had it been even remotely true, but it's looking like, this is not true at all. Which is not to say that we shouldn't still have conversations with folks. We should still have conversations with folks. Maybe a 20-minute conversation doesn't result in them changing their opinion for 9 months. That's very specific. But look, we should still be having conversations with folks. We should still be open and honest, and we should reflect back to our friends and neighbors and family members on how proposed legislation in Louisiana makes us feel, or how booking Iggy Azalea makes us feel. We should still have those conversations. We just shouldn't do it because, hey, there was this research study that definitively proved that having a 20-minute conversation would change someone's opinion for 9 months, because that's just not necessarily true. This is bogus. Oh, bogus surveys. That hurts my heart. It hurts my heart when a researcher makes stuff up. So we will wait for his response, but that's not looking good. Not looking good. Filed under the category of hypocrisy, a Michigan pastor who has publicly rallied against gay marriage, he has resigned from his post. Why? Because he wants to travel? Because he wants to preach in other places? No, of course not. He was outed for soliciting sex from men through Grindr, that app that is geared towards gay, bisexual, and bi-curious men. The Reverend Matthew McKella made the announcement on Sunday in a letter to the congregation at St. John's Lutheran Church and School in Midland, Michigan, after he was outed by the gay and lesbian entertainment site Queerty. His resignation became effective this week. According to screenshots obtained by Queerty, McKella was soliciting sex from men on Grindr. The married father of five reportedly confirmed the authenticity of the screenshots to Queerty, but declined to comment. Calls made to the church by the Free Press were not immediately returned, and a number listed for McKella is now disconnected. The article also included a screenshot of a Facebook post opposing gay marriage that he wrote in September. It read this quote, "Read these words this morning." This is from this pastor, right? Okay, this is what he put on Facebook back in September. Quote, "Read these words this morning. Long before gay marriage was part of our national discussion, natural marriage did not always reflect God's will of love and submission. Divorce became common. Love and marriage grew colder, and children were not always seen as a blessing. Changing the culture begins with changing our culture of marriage and family, taking the marriage union with the utmost seriousness, and welcoming children in our church. Amen." His Facebook page is now deactivated. He told Queerty that he resigned from his position after the story surfaced, and that his wife and senior pastor were aware of the activity on Grindr. And a letter posted on the St. John Church's website, the church's senior pastor, the Reverend Daniel Kempin, tells parishioners that McKella, quote, "has acknowledged that there was sin and repentance, and I have testified that there is indeed forgiveness through the same Lord who forgives all our sins. To make matters worse, though, the details of sin that have been kept confidential are being posted online by those who seek to do harm to the McKella family and to St. John's." So, yes, just to remind you all, it's our fault. It is the gay media's fault, and everyone should just turn away from these stories. So it doesn't matter that he's rallied against same-sex marriage, that he has used his voice to raise opposition to marriage equality. The fact that he was on Grindr, the fact that he was soliciting sex from other men, and all of this hypocrisy, that's our fault for covering it. We should have just given him a wink and a nod and just said, "You go, guy. It's fine what you're doing. Give me a break." It's called taking responsibility. Now, I'm not for outing. Talked about this many times before. I don't like outing. I like when people come out of their own volition. But when you have used your voice publicly, when you have used it publicly to suppress the voices of LGBT folks, Yeah, it's going to come right back at you if you are trying secretly, and by the way, not doing that very well, to be a part of the LGBT community. That's going to come right back at you. There's just no way that ever worked out for anyone. Continuing with pastor news, bakeries, florist shops, and other venues, which have become this battleground for LGBT rights in recent years, well, now there's a pastor that has some comments about it. Pastor Stephen Anderson of Arizona's Faithful Word Baptist Church, he has taken a defiant stance against those conservative entrepreneurs arguing that they are actually being too nice to the LGBT community and as such are not standing for the Word of God. In a fiery, pretty convoluted sermon originally posted by the New Civil Rights Movement, the right-wing pastor pointed to Oregon's Sweet Cakes by Melissa, whose owners Aaron and Melissa Klein were recently slapped with a fine of at least $135,000 for turning away a lesbian couple who sought a wedding cake in 2013. This pastor said that he didn't feel sorry that the Kleins had been fined and shuttered their business in the wake of the controversy because he believes that they are tools of the media to brainwash you. He argued that the Kleins attend a, quote, stupid liberal church. This is hilarious. And he said that Melissa is not taking a stand against same-sex marriage at all. It's weak. It's worthless. She is part of what is destroying America. He said, who thinks it's a hard decision if some, and I'm not going to use the F word as he used it, wants you to make them a wedding cake? Anyone struggling with that right now? And it went all kinds of viral. He said nobody even asked them to cater a wedding with cheap, stupid pizza. He's oddly making some of the arguments that the LGBT media made, but he's saying they didn't go far enough. He said that people should, you know, you raise up their voices and decry anytime they see LGBT people anywhere. He suggested in the sermon that women should be silent in the church. He claimed in a sermon, I suffer not a woman to teach nor to usurp authority over the man. So none of this should be surprising, but I like when we share things like this because, you know, then we know some of the voices that are out there and it makes it easier for us to form our opinions or just to roll our eyes. Whichever way you want to go. A couple other really quick stories. President Obama proclaimed that LGBT rights are human rights in a statement commemorating International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia. He said this, quote, we work toward this goal every day. Here at home, we are working to end bias-motivated violence, combat discrimination in the workplace, and address the specific needs of transgender persons. End quote. Very cool statement from President Obama. We like when he makes statements. I feel like people are starting to take it for granted, and you shouldn't, because this is a president who consistently supports LGBT rights publicly now at this point. And yes, his views have evolved, but where he is now, it's pretty darn brilliant. Pretty darn brilliant. Also in Washington, D.C., other great events there, a rally and march against transphobia were held in Washington, D.C. this week. The events were organized to coincide with this International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia. Lourdes Ashley Hunter of the Trans Women of Color Collective said this, quote, trans people of color are disproportionately impacted by structural oppression. We are being denied access to housing, health care. We are denied access to employment opportunities. And I had some colleagues who were at that rally, and they said it was incredible. They said it was incredible. Just one more update on conversion therapy, which I know we talk about quite a bit. Representative Jackie Speier, who is a Democrat from California, she sent a letter to the Federal Trade Commission insisting on an inquiry into the practices of therapists who perform conversion therapy on LGBT individuals. She said, quote, being transgender, gay, lesbian, or bisexual is not a disease to be cured or a mental illness that requires treatment. So maybe the Federal Trade Commission, maybe the FTC will take action on this. Because currently, just to remind you, there are only 3 states where this is banned. It's only in New Jersey, in California, and now recently in Oregon. So we have tons of work to do to get rid of conversion therapy, which is doing so much harm. Let's put aside for a second that it's most definitely not converting anybody. That's been debunked over and over again. Conversion therapy, not converting anybody. But it's not only not converting people, it is actually doing harm to people. So we need to take more action. If you are in one of the 47 states that currently allows conversion therapy, that's a lot of states. Please know it's not just marriage equality that we're waiting for, though I guess we're going to have a big update on that in the next couple weeks. There are other issues out there like conversion therapy and adoption and the ban on gay men giving blood or the new proposed, hey, gay men, wait a year. Just don't have sex for a year and then you can give blood while people are dying and the blood supply runs so low. So many issues out there, and that's how we keep doing our show. Our huge thanks to everybody over at Pride.com. So exciting over there. They launched their site, and you should most certainly check it out. I enjoy it. A lot of things trending out there. On next week's show, the return of filmmaker Rola Selback. Such a fun chat we have planned for her. She's got amazing new projects that we are going to tell you all about. You can listen to her first appearance on the show by strolling on over to thisshowisogay.com. And if you click on the guest tab, it has every guest we've ever had on the show, and you can specifically go to that episode and listen, because every episode, the 307 episodes that we have previously done on this show, are all to be found on thisshowisogay.com. You guys, thank you so much for listening. Get out there and use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
If you remember that's